Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Elodie Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today's Tuesday, November 14th, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Well, Melody.
How are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, it sounded like something was dropped.
Not to me.
That was bizarre. It looks like Todd is still there, but yeah. Anyway, let's go ahead and get to the gold prices today. We have gold struggling, but we're still up 280 at 1281 off its high of 1284. Little pressure on silver, 2 cents at $17.12. Platinum is down $6 at 930, with palladium down $3 at $991. The USDX today is down 0.67 at 93.84. Big hit on crude oil today, down 112 at 55.64. And the paper markets today, you have the Dow down 30 points at 23,409. The NASDAQ is down 19 points at 6,737. And the S&P was down 6 points at 2,578. The 10-year yield down 0.02 at 2.38%. And the euro climbed, still off their high, down 0.01 at 118. Japan barely moved overnight. It's bizarre. Didn't even have a correction of a point. Assuming their markets in London was the same. So I don't know if these numbers on my screen are wrong or just some very odd. It's basically looking like the Asian and European markets didn't move whatsoever overnight.
You know what that means, don't you?
What does that mean?
The guy in charge of falsifying the numbers went out and got drunk.
He fell asleep. Yes, that's probably the. That's what really makes sense. But late yesterday afternoon, we had Venezuela was declared in default late Monday by S&P Global Ratings after a 30-day grace period expired. For a payment that was due in October, and so that also sets in motion a more series of events that could even make that country's humanitarian crisis much worse. And owning Venezuela's debt has become a divisive issue. Some critics say that buying the debt, investors are providing a lifeline to support the president, Maduro, who's been labeled as a dictator. And then they argue that the government has prioritized paying bondholders instead of feeding and aiding its people. But on both sides, experts on the side say government policies
something happened. You're hearing things dropping.
Yeah, it did.
And you have portions of text that are disappearing.
But, of course, the experts are saying that it's not the debt that's to blame for the suffering. Well, of course it is. They wouldn't be in this position if they didn't have debt.
How are they going to default if they're not in debt?
but the reason they say that is because they see countries like us that are super in debt. And, of course, there will be a day when we don't pay our debt. And they just want to make sure that those who were in charge of creating the debt are protected. But what's interesting, though, is, you know, people don't understand what they have in their portfolios and their 401ks. And when something like this happens, how is it going to affect your 401? Most people don't even know what bonds they're holding. And there's a lot of portfolio managers that do own Venezuelan debt. And a lot of these bonds aren't purchased directly from the government. In fact, as of August, the administration made that illegal. Instead, bond traders buy them from other traders on a secondary market, and those funds go to the bank or investment firm or on the other side of the transaction and not to the Venezuelan government. So I'll guarantee you most people have no idea which bonds they're holding in their portfolios. So again, it's we'll see how this is going to play out. They owe, what, $60 billion to bondholders, and they have $9.6 billion in cash at this point in time. So some of the top institutional holders of Venezuelan debt, bonds sold by both the government and state-owned oil company, Fidelity Investments, T. Rowe Price, BlackRock, Goldman Sachs, Invesco Power Shares. I'm sure a lot of you folks out there perhaps have
an interesting article on Venezuela down here, just for a side point. They're talking about this default. It says the default comes as the International Swaps and Derivatives Association prepares to decide whether the state-run oil giant Petróleos de Venezuela experienced a credit event earlier this month. Now, what is a credit event, Melody?
You tell us, Al.
Well, they have to decide. How is it that you decide? It has something to do with debt. All right, we can pretty much figure that out. Did they or did they not have a credit event earlier this month? And it has to have something to do with paying your debts. And we have an organization called the International Swaps and Derivatives Association, which will decide whether it was a credit event or it wasn't a credit event. Now, how can that be? Either you paid your debt or you did not pay your debt. Right? But they have an institution that will decide, regardless of whether you paid it, did you or did you not suffer a credit event? And it goes on and it says that organization missed, or the oil company, the Venezuelan oil company, missed a $1.12 billion bond payment on November 2nd. If the International Swaps and Derivatives Association decides that the Venezuelan oil company did experience a credit event, that could lead to bondholders to declare a default, which could trigger an avalanche. Right? So what we have here, Melody, it appears that if it looks like your credit event, right, you failed to pay your bill, if it's big enough, it's not a credit event. They will decide because the consequences might be too extreme. We didn't actually have a credit event. Now, if you're a small fry, you're not particularly wealthy, there aren't enormous adverse consequences, then you had a credit event. But if you're rich and important and powerful, then maybe you did not have a credit event. And I just listened to this and I don't know. Credit events depend on what kind of consequences your default might cause. If you have big consequences, it's not a credit event. Small consequences, apparently it is. And it just kind of makes me laugh, wince, smirk, whatever, just to say, my God. You know, is there any country on earth right now where the government tells the truth?
Well, it's not any different than using restructure.
Well, yeah, that's another one.
Oh, we're restructuring. Hey, no, you're bankrupt.
Yeah, right.
You know, but we're restructuring. Well, that's what it is. I mean, here, if you look at the S&P Global Ratings, they said they declared Venezuela, the government, the country, was declared in default. But that was after they missed a 30-day grace period.
Yeah.
So they've already had an extra 30 days for when the payment was due in October. And yeah, and yet, but the point is there's a lot of portfolios that are holding these bonds. And we'll see how this plays out. You have Puerto Rico. Also, I saw Puerto Rico is asking for $94 billion. 80% of their of that island still has no power. They're coming to the U.S. and saying, help us. And so you don't hear anybody talking about their debt. They're beyond probably their payments. Heck, they don't want to talk about this debt, just like they don't want to talk about our debt. Heavens, no, it might upset their little paper markets. You might have the Dow drop by 8,000 points or, you know, something like that. So, no, it's something that's kept very quiet. And maybe on your quarterly statements when you get them, you'll see, oh, well, gee, you know, everything is down. Must have been those Venezuela bonds. But
yeah, that'll be it. It'll get blamed on Venezuela or maybe Catalonia.
Yeah.
Or an unseasonably warm or cool winter. They'll have an experience for it. But you know, one of the other things that gets me about this, we're talking about they will decide, the International Swaps and Derivatives Association will decide on whether the state-run oil giant Petróleos de Venezuela experienced a credit event. Why is it a credit event rather than a debt default? You know, when we say credit, we mean debt. You don't get any credit without debt. You don't get any debt without credit, but they're two sides of the same coin. Everyone says, would you like more credit? And everyone says, yay, I want more credit. How about would you like more debt? Boo, I don't want more debt. But you can't have more credit without getting more debt. And it's just another one of the words that they use in a way that is intended to paint a rosy picture when maybe things are not all that, you know, that all that excellent at the moment. Maybe it's not all that rosy. And it's offensive to me that they do this in ways that is obvious. They are conducting economic policy based on what is politically correct. We don't care about the math. We don't care about the numbers. Just got to keep everybody happy. And it offends me. It offends me because they insult my intelligence, such as it is, you know? I would really like if somebody came up and just said, look, here's what's going on. Here's the truth of the matter. But instead, they treat me like a little child, and you and everybody else in the audience, we get treated like children as they try to adjust the words to avoid telling us what's really happening. We need somebody up there in position of power willing to call a spade, and just say, here's the truth. Now you got to deal with it. Oh.
Well, speaking of debt, you have subprime auto delinquency. That's nearing crisis levels at non-bank lenders. Again, delinquent subprime loans, crisis levels. And while loan performance at banks and credit unions has been improving, this is data from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. They're looking at almost 9.7% of subprime car loans made by non-bank lenders, including private equity-backed firms catering to car dealers, became 90 or more days past due in the third quarter. This is the highest annualized rate in more than 7 years.
More than seven, huh?
Yeah, so
it takes
right
us
back
almost
then.
Back to the onset of the financial crisis and the Great Recession. And how did we get there? How did we get there the first time, Melody?
You tell us, Al.
It was, you know the answer to this, Melody.
I do, but I just like you.
Yeah. It was subprime lending to homeowners. That's what really triggered this thing. All right? They loaned money to people that they knew from the onset would not be able to repay, would probably not be able to repay the debt. And then they didn't repay the debt. And then things began to go south and the dominoes started tipping. And next thing we know, we have the Great Recession. And here we are, 8 years later, nine, and 7 years, 8 years later. And what are we doing? We are doing subprime loans on auto, subprime borrowing on auto loans. How is it that we didn't learn our lesson the first time, Melody? Huh? Once again, we're doing subprime. Once again, it's not as big as a house, but just the same, 10% of the auto loans are already 90 days behind. And if you figure how many add in, how many are 60 days behind, and how many are 30 days behind, you're probably talking 25% of existing auto loans are not being paid timely. Mm-hmm. And it might be more than that. And you have to wonder, is this good for America? Is this good for the economy?
And you know what, Al? I mean, when you're talking about subprime lending, okay, these folks that fall into that category, and no, this is not disrespecting them in any way, but they don't have high health care bills because they get subsidized. They get subsidized in many other ways, and they're still defaulting on their loans. Yeah. What about the people? I don't know if you were here the day I made the announcement that my health insurance went up $500 a month. How do these, I can do it, how do these families of four raising children in school How do they deal with a $400, $500, $600, $800 increase a month?
We can't.
No. So we're going to see those defaults. You know, you can have the Federal Reserve brag about how, you know, these banks and credit unions have been improving. Just wait until those folks, wait till this middle class gets, you know, more of these inflationary needs. And you'll begin to see those loans defaulting, affecting the banks and the credit unions. So this isn't going away. It's not going to get better.
It's not going away.
This isn't going to get better with tax reform, where people get an extra $1,200 a year. This isn't going to get better with jobs coming back into this country in a little bit higher wages. I also had an article here. The richest 1% now own half the world's wealth.
Half
the world's wealth. We don't see that trickling down anywhere, do we now, folks?
And you're not going to.
You're not going to. Oh, well, we'll repatriate some of that. No, it doesn't work that way. The total wealth in the world grew by 6% over the past 12 months to $280 trillion. That's from Credit Suisse. And that was the fastest wealth creation since 2012. So they now own more than half of the world's wealth. That's incredible.
I know. And it's intolerable, and it's unsustainable.
But in the meantime,
they may try to sustain it with military force or whatever. But in the end, they have the super rich have painted themselves into a corner that they will not easily escape.
They're not going to give up. But look at the if they lose half of it, look at the influence they have in world governments.
Well, I understand. And the government
That's
serves them
problem.
Because
people
in Congress, they listen to money.
Talks. Yeah, they say, Melody, you just don't like the wealth. No, that's not it at all. Look at the influence. They become politicians. Look at Zuckerberg. He's going to be president one day. That's his goal. Can you imagine Mark Zuckerberg as president? He might be president of the New World Order, perhaps, but they're thinking...
He'll look good on his resume.
That's the frightening part of this, the amount of wealth that has been created. And where does it come from?
Where does the wealth come from? Comes from the middle class. Comes from the people who actually work for a living and are more productive than consumer. They are more of a producer than a consumer. They actually produce more than they consume, and they're the ones that generate wealth that can be loaned, that can be whatever, and they're the ones that hold this country together, and they are being chewed up and destroyed. We're going to take a break for some commercials, and we'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
We will find you acting on your best.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csetalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
Well, we do have another little package today. I went out and I bought some 90% silver. These are quarters. And because the premiums have dropped so low, I was able to upgrade from circulated, which we usually include in our bags, to brilliant uncirculated BU quarters. And still a great price, 90% silver BU quarters. We have $25 face value, and a 1/10 ounce American Gold Eagle includes your shipping for $495. $495, $25 face value, BU quarters. And this is what you do. When premiums drop, you can buy some better grade, higher grade, higher quality coins. And it's a terrific buy. These at one point in time were unaffordable to most people because the premiums on 90% silver were so stiff. I mean, the premiums were higher than what silver eagles were because there's not a lot of 90% silver out there. A lot of it's been sold. It comes in from a secondary market. So when things are all hot and heated and people are overbuying 90% silver and the price is rising to $20, $30, $40, this product becomes non-existent. You usually can't get it. So now you can upgrade to some brilliant uncirculated quarters, 90% silver, along with a 1/10 ounce American Gold Eagle. Includes your shipping costs, $494. 800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188.
You know, we were talking about subprime borrowers in the previous segment, and pointing out that subprime borrowing was at least one of the primary causes, if not the primary cause. Hard to say what the real primary cause was for the Great Recession, but the subprime borrowing on homes, meaning lending money to people they knew would not pay the bill, but they'd be able to pay the bill, at least they'd have a higher probability to default. That was one of the causes for the Great Recession. The reason we had subprime borrowing is because the government promised to buy the loans. If a bank went out and loaned money to a homeless person, they were okay because as soon as they got done, they could cut the deal with the homeless person. He'd promise to pay. They'd be able to sell that loan document to the government for full face value plus a percentage on top of that. They made their profit the same day. They made their profit the same day they loaned money to the homeless guy. Figuratively speaking, all right? So he could build a house or whatever. They owned him the money, but the government took responsibility for that loan. They bought it, all right? Which means the government is the one that incited the subprime borrowing for the homes. Now here we are in the last few years. We've had subprime borrowing for automobiles, which will undoubtedly come to lead us to a bad end before this is over. And I have to assume, I don't know it for a fact, but I certainly assume that the reason they're doing it is because the government has created an incentive. They said, okay, you can lend money to people who don't even have driver's licenses, they don't know how to drive, but give them the money, you got a car anyway, and we'll buy the loan from you. Well, if that's true, again, the government is encouraging people to create more debt. There's two points out of this. One of them, you know, it's easy to make fun of the government for being stupid or the banks for being stupid by going back to subprime borrowing, even after we learned a powerful lesson that it's a dumb idea just a few years ago. We're doing it again. Is that because the people in positions of power are stupid? Really? You know, we can make fun of them as being stupid, or is it evidence that they are desperate? And if the way I'm inclined to look at it, as I've been advancing the idea for, I don't know, maybe a month in this program, I don't know how long exactly, I think that because we live in a debt-based monetary system, I don't think we can go into debt. I think we must go into debt. I think the debt must practically double on every 8 years. I think maybe there is a mathematical reason for this, and I don't know what it is. I speculate as to its existence, but I think they have to go deeper into debt, and therefore, if ordinary people who could pay the debt but are perhaps either overly indebted already or getting wise to the game and say, I'm not going any deeper into debt, if they won't go into debt for whatever reason, we need a new class of debtors. We need people that are stupid enough to sign their name on a piece of paper and say, oh yeah, I promise to pay you back $100,000. All right? We need more of them to keep this system running. Enter the subprime borrower. We need the debt instruments that he helps create when he signs his name to them. That's my suspicion. It might even be part of the reason for bringing illegal aliens into this country. We need more people to come in here and go deeper into debt to hold this debt-based monetary system together. Is that the truth? Is that God's truth? I certainly don't know. I just think it's one of those things that looks like a duck. It quacks like a duck. I think it's a duck, all right? I think it's evidence that they have to go into debt, and they are desperate. And so they're doing subprime borrowing again.
There was a big announcement made. The Senate's GOP tax reform bill, they're looking to seek repeal of Obamacare individual mandate. The Senate GOP leader said their tax reform bill will include repeal of Obamacare individual mandate. The mandate requires most Americans to have some form of health coverage during the year or pay a tax penalty. An estimated 13 million people, fewer people would have insurance if the mandate were to be repealed. So I guess there would be less subsidies, meaning that they would be freeing up money to apply for the tax reform, for the tax cuts. So I'm not sure. Of course, the Democrats are all in a hissy, saying that they're cutting taxes on the wealthy and taking health care from millions and raising premiums on millions of others, all to reduce taxes on the rich. So we'll see if the House accepts it. So a repeal of the mandate could alleviate one of the concerns held by most House Republicans about the Senate's versions of the bill. But this just came up. I just saw the headline, and so I'm just kind of absorbing it as I am right here on air. But Senator Rand Paul said in a posting, Twitter posting, that repeal of the mandate also allows an additional $300 billion-plus in tax cuts. That's because killing the mandate would lead to an estimated 13 million fewer people with their health insurance by 2027. In turn, the government would spend almost $340 billion less on subsidies for the low-income people insured through Medicaid.
So what's going to happen to those poor people when they need health care? The government's not going to pay for it, apparently.
Mm-mm.
They're going to go to the emergency room at the local hospital.
Yeah, people, we still
got to pay. Somebody and the people in the hospital are going to have to pay for this.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to provide the care, and it's going to cost money. And I'm not in favor of Obamacare. I'm not advocating for it. But what I'm trying to say, again, it's almost a standard theme on this program, we are caught between the rock and the hard place. There is no graceful exit. There is no painless exit. one way or another, we have to pay bills that we can't pay. And that's going to create a problem that is going to be devastating, although I can't tell you when.
We do have a caller, Al. We have Lance in Texas calling us today. Good afternoon, Lance.
Good afternoon, y'all. Hey, Al, you keep saying you're not sure, but you think we need to add debt. No, Al, we have to add debt. It's mathematically impossible not to because they create the money out of thin air, but the problem with that is they don't create the interest to pay it back. So it's mathematically impossible to pay it back, so therefore you have to create more and more and more, and yes, you get to a parabolic part at the very end where it goes straight inverted up.
I agree with you. I'm just saying when I equivocate on this, I'm doing that because I don't actually understand how this all works. I can see it happening, and I'm about 95% confident what I'm saying is true. But on the other hand, I recognize I could be making a mistake, so I'm not gonna tell anybody that this is gospel. But I'm gonna say, look, I think there's something here. They have to go deeper into debt. It's not an accident. They have to go deeper into debt. And if it's true, it's not the debt that will kill us. It'll be when we run out of credit and they can't go deeper into debt. They could perhaps, if the way I'm looking at this is valid, they could go up to $40 trillion in debt. It won't matter. But the day that the creditors shut them off and they say, sorry, we're not lending anymore. You are not lending you any more money. You can't go deeper into debt. At that point in time, the house of cards collapses. That's
okay,
my theory, and I'm
now
sticking to it for the moment.
Hang on now. You're talking money. I'm talking currency. Money is specie. It's what you and Mel talk about all day long. Specie is money. You make the point about it all day long. Currency is not money.
I agree.
It's a promise to pay. So that's where Ludwig von Mises, in his book, his seminal work, what's it called, Human Action, or something along that lines.
Don't know.
States, well, it's also known as somebody's law, where good money drives, bad money drives out good money.
Yeah, it drives
and
it out of circulation.
And that's what we're talking about. Everybody confuses money for currency.
Oh, I agree with
debt
you.
Debt for money. This is their whole shell game. This is what it's
no,
all about.
No, I get
about.
You. Believe me, I understand. I understand what you're talking about. But what we have a problem that you have to think in terms of how do you explain this to people who don't understand the difference between currency and money. And it's, I won't
I
say
it.
It's impossible, and I won't say that the audience that's listening to this program doesn't get that idea, but a lot of people don't. You look at them and you look at them and say, well, this is currency and this is money, you see. It's
this is
all
I
they
do.
Know. If it's spent for most people, it's money, and they don't understand the significance. There's way more involved than just spending.
Because it spends, exactly.
Yeah.
But this is how I do it.
Yeah.
Let's say you create $100. You're on a desert island. You create $100 out of thin air at 1% interest. If you don't create $101, this dang debt will never be repaid. And
yeah, I understand that. And there's another point to it besides that.
They only create $100, but they don't create the
interest. Let's create $100 on the island, and we have 10 people living on the island, and we're going to loan $10 to each of the 10 people, and each of them owns a tenth of the island, and they put up their tenth of the island as collateral for the loan. Okay, it all sounds pretty cool, but when it comes time to pay the loan a year from now, we don't owe collectively, we don't own $100, we owe $101, which guarantees
exactly
that somebody is going to give up a tenth of the island because he doesn't have the dollar. He doesn't have the extra money. He doesn't have a dollar and $10 and a dime to pay it, and therefore the bank will seize 10% of the island. They'll get one of these guys land. He'll be reduced to the status of a pauper, and then we'll worry about the rest of them. And next year, when
or
it comes around
slaves
again, we will again have somebody who can't make the deal. they can't pay the debt.
Yes.
And the bank goes, oh, gee, we have to take your land now. Before you play the game long enough, the bank will own the whole island and the rest of and the
and
people will be nothing but sharecroppers.
Yep. We're all debt slaves.
Yeah, yep. I agree.
Well, cheers. He goes, hey, shout out to Ivan, my buddy Ivan. Love that guy.
We
cheers,
will.
Y'all. Keep up the good work.
Thanks,
Thank
Lance.
You, Lance.
Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. Well, you know, it's good. I enjoy calls like that because it's evidence that there are people that understand what we're talking about.
Of course they do.
As bizarre as some of it is. You know,
we've been talking. This program's been around since 1995. We have a lot of listeners out there that are very educated as far as what's going on, and over the years they've been involved. They've seen they understand the truth. Not only do they understand the truth of what's happening in Washington with our liberties and our rights, but also financially, and that we do have a fiat currency. So, you know, we gather new listeners all the time, and those are the ones that we, you know, continue to educate. But listeners like Lance, absolutely, they know exactly what's going on.
Well, and again, you know, there are people
we have some highly intelligent listeners.
Well, what I'm thinking in terms of is, at times, I'm assuming that we get some new listeners.
And we do.
And they do, and you have to kind of ease them into this.
I hope we do, Al.
Well, I do too. But you have to find a way to try to communicate some of these ideas in ways that ordinary people can listen to and kind of think about, roll around, and say, you know, that sounds a little crazy, but I don't know, maybe it's true. You got to kind of ease them into this thing. And that's the perspective I come from. I think more than anything, I'm thinking, are there any new people listening to the program? We got to ease them into some of these insights rather than just tell them, oh, this is absolutely God's truth. Now, I'm not an evangelist and not a prophet.
And I do hear Al many, 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 many times. Well, I picked up your program a couple of months ago. I picked up your program a year ago. I picked up your program. So, you know, we do, or we wouldn't be here. Because of all the support that we get from the listeners through purchasing gold and silver, not only provides them with a safety net for their finances, the insurance policy to protect their wealth, it also keeps programs like this on the air. And it keeps programs like Pastor Butch Paul on the air. It's going to keep programs like Beth at CSC Coalition, Common Sense Coalition, on the air. It keeps a lot of things flowing, and, you know, it all comes from your support. We don't run advertisers. Sure, you hear advertisings from during the breaks and so forth, but they don't sponsor the program. So everything that you hear during the breaks doesn't apply to those programs. The programs are bought and paid for by you folks, by the supporters of Discount Gold and Silver. So we thank you. Other listeners thank you. Those who haven't been able to purchase gold and silver or are unable to, or they thank you for keeping the program on the air.
And now that we've all said thanks, let's take a couple more commercials.
Well, it's that time of the year, Al.
Right,
it's in the
back.
Season.
It is the season to be jolly and thankful.
Absolutely.
All right, every we'll be day. Back in a second. Please stay tuned.
Oh, won't you tell me again tonight?
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Alfred Adisk, and this is Financial Survival. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom. What's next, Melody?
Well, I just wanted to, today, the Feds collected a record taxes in October. This was released to the monthly Treasury statement. Yesterday it was released that the federal government, hauled in a record total tax revenue month of October, $235 billion. And they were still short $63 billion. Mm-hmm. So, you know, let's cut, this and that. How do you do tax reform when you can't even bring in? And the point is, it's not even bringing in that amount. $235 billion mm-hmm. is the
amount of
tax.
About 4 months of quantitative easing. They were doing $80 billion a month for quantitative easing, at least for a while. And so that's about 4 months worth of quantitative easing.
Anyway.
Well, they get more money, but they still, again, they have to go into more debt. And the evidence is they keep on doing it.
Yeah, they are, by $63 billion a month.
Yeah. It still doesn't matter. You could give them $1 trillion a month. It doesn't matter, Melody. They don't want to pay off the existing debt. If you give them $1 trillion a month, tax revenue $1 trillion a month, they're going to go another $200 billion or $500 billion on top of that into additional deficit spending. They have to create debt. I don't think they even care about the tax revenue. I think that's kind of irrelevant, but we got to make more debt.
But, you know, we talk about Obama and raising the national debt by $10 trillion in 8 years. I guarantee you in 8 years, I don't know who will be president in the next four, but I guarantee you we'll be close to that number, too. It could even be more than that, unless, of course, I believe it'll collapse before then. But let's just say they're able to pull a rabbit out of their hat. We'll be $30 trillion.
Do you need special zoning to keep a rabbit in your hat?
If you pull that rabbit out of that. But the American debt level, I mean, how much bigger can that grow? That rose during the third quarter, driven by an increase in mortgage loans. This was released by the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. That was released today. Total U.S. household debt was $12.9 trillion. In the 3 months to September, up $116 billion from the prior 3 months. You have debt levels were $605 billion higher than the third quarter of 2016, and the portion of the overall debt that was delinquent rose slightly. So, again,
the crazy thing about this is debt. Yeah, I know. But we have, again, the reason, I believe, is the debt-based monetary system. As long as we had an asset-based monetary system running on gold, running on silver, the debt was relatively small. The gold, the silver, they have a tendency, capacity to keep debt small. But as soon as we shift over to a debt-based monetary system, and debt is nothing but a promise to pay. How hard is that? Asset-based monetary system means if you say you want to buy something, you have to have the money to pay for it. Not a promise to pay. you're going to ultimately have to come up with the money to pay for it. That means work. That means productivity. It means somebody's got to dig a hole in the ground and mine the gold that we're going to use to pay this debt. Right? In an asset-based monetary system, it depends on work. In a debt-based monetary system, all a debt is a promise to pay. I will sign my name right here, and I promise to pay you, you know, X number of dollars every month for the next 30 years, and I get this house over here. But the thing takes place. I don't have to produce a significant down payment. They still require down payments, but it isn't the same way as it was under the asset-based system. Under asset, you had, what have you saved? How much have you saved? Under the debt-based, it's not about what you saved. It's not about what you have. It's how convincing are you as someone who can make promises. Are you effective at making promises? Con artists are. Politicians are. Wheelers and dealers are. If you are good at making promises, you can be fabulously wealthy, or seemingly so, in the debt-based monetary system. You're not going to be, if you are a producer, they might need you and they might not. They don't care. But they need that debt. And again, all you got to do, I promise, I'm going to pay you $100,000. No, I'll pay you $500,000. No, I'll pay you $1 million. No, a billion. I promise, God's honor. Here, let me sign the paper. I owe you $1 billion. You're never going to get that $1 billion out of me. But I can make that promise. And if the bank will certify and say, well, we've got a promise from Al for $1 billion, and we can treat that now as an asset. I have created an asset that they can use in the banking system by simply signing my name on a piece of paper. I didn't dig a hole in the ground. I didn't mine any gold. I didn't build a house. I didn't build a car. But I intend to purchase them with nothing more, or with little more than my signature. And that's where we're getting into trouble. That's part of the reason why the debt is growing. It's easy. I don't have to go to work. All I have to do is sign a piece of paper, say, here's a debt. I promise to pay. Good enough. The system is pretty much happy with me. The whole thing is nuts. It's bizarre, and it can't work forever. And it probably can't work a lot longer. Sooner or later, and probably sooner rather than later, the public is going to begin to pick up on some of these ideas and realize, wait a second, that doesn't make sense. Well, you know, it's like Lance was talking about paying off the debt to the bank and the rest of that sort of thing based on the interest. The bank, one of the problems we have with the fiat dollar, right, debt-based monetary system, the government and or the Federal Reserve issue these dollar bills, right? They loan them into the circulation, so far as I understand, and they may spend them on their government programs, but here's the thing. I've talked about this before, but if I go to Melody's hardware store or appliance store and buy a flat screen TV for $1,000 and I give Melody a check for $1,000, she's not paid until that check goes from her to her bank to my bank to my bank account. They pull $1,000 out of my account and then back to my bank, back to her bank, back to her account. Then she's paid when the money, well, figuratively speaking, even then it's a debate with the fiat currency. But the point I'm trying to make is the guy who gets the flat screen TV is the one who has to pay the bill. I issued the check. I signed it. That means I got to pay for it. It's got to come out of my account. Right now we have a system where the federal government and or the Federal Reserve, they issue these green pieces of paper, but they do not redeem them. Who redeems the government's debt instruments? And the answer is we do. I redeem if I've got $1,000 worth of government paper. I say, what will I do with this? How do I redeem it? I know. I'll go over to Melody's appliance store and buy a new $1,000 flat screen TV. Now, Melody has redeemed the government's debt instrument for me. She gave me something tangible. She gave me something physical. Now I have something. I have traded off my debt instrument for some sort of a tangible asset. All right? I've been paid. Now Melody has to find some idiot who is willing to take that same green piece of paper, $1,000, going to trade it off or whatever it is Melody wants to buy. And my point, if I'm making this at all clear, is we the people are redeeming the government's debt instruments. They don't redeem their paperwork. It used to be if a bank issued a gold certificate or a silver certificate, or the government did, you could walk down to the Federal Reserve and say, I've got a $100 silver certificate here, and I want to redeem it. They say, yes, sir. And they crank out, here comes 100 silver dollars. The system that issued the note redeems the note by giving you some sort of physical payment, right? That's the way it's supposed to be. Now they issue the note and they leave it up to you and me to find somebody who is foolish enough to accept these worthless pieces of paper as payment for bills. And it works, more or less, for now. We get away with it. But you have to look at this and say, even if it works, it's wrong. Why? Because government effectively never pays its bills. They don't redeem their own debt instruments. They just get to write it off. They buy stuff. It's like people never cash the government checks, at least not on the government's account. They cash it on Melody's account or my account or your account or whatever, and we kind of work this out among ourselves, but we, the people, are paying the government's debts. And so, of course, government gets big. Of course, government gets huge and oppressive and unlimited. It's when we had gold and silver that government couldn't issue these debt instruments. They had to pay their bills. They could issue the debt instrument, but they had to redeem it. They had to actually pay for it with gold and silver. When somebody brought it back, say, I got one of the government's paper dollars here. It says, $100. I'd like that in gold, please. Okay. If the government has to pay, I have no objection. If the government that issued it doesn't have to pay, there's a problem here. And most of the people listening to this program are concerned about the growth of government and the power of government and how it's getting too big and too powerful and too oppressive, too much of a police state. This is all coming out of the fiat currency. Government doesn't have to pay its bills. Imagine I could just write a check to Melody and buy a flat screen TV from her, knowing that Melody would never submit my check. The check I wrote for $1,000 would never hit my bank account. I could write a check for $10,000, $100,000, million, billion, trillion. As long as it isn't going to be redeemed out of my account, what do I care? My only cost is a little paper and ink. And then I can get things. I can buy the world, figuratively speaking, and to some significant degree, that's what our government has done with fiat currency, debt-based currency, promises to pay that the government never keeps. So, I don't know. It's, you look at this, yeah. It's wrong. What we're dealing with is wrong, wrong, wrong. It's clever. It's brilliant. It's probably been done 100 times in America, in world history. I don't know if it has been done that many times or it hasn't, but just the same, it is a racket. It's not right. The guy who gets the flat screen TV, the payment has to come out of his account. And when the government hands out $100 bills to people who work for them, that $100 bill has to be redeemed by the government. You use it, you redeem it. They don't. We redeem it among ourselves, and that's foolishness. So, one of the things you can do about it, well, what can you do about it? You've got to, in my opinion, you need to study it, understand it, or at least reach a point where you think you understand it, and then make a decision. Do you want to continue to place your wealth, save your wealth in the form of paper debt instruments?
Sooner because later, what will happen, those will become, they become so... they'll begin to lose their value. They will continue to lose their value. You're purchasing
power. They've been losing it all along. They've already lost
96%. Your purchasing power will be lost to inflation. Your purchasing power declines even today, even though we're told, oh, we have no inflation in this country. Your dollars that you keep in your pocket and your investments and in the bank and your savings account, your CDs are all losing value to a losing dollar. And you know what? They might have been able to control it on a domestic level for this long, but you know what? I don't think they're going to be able to control it much longer on a global basis, because you got countries that are coming into their own. You have countries that are, they're positioning themselves. They're trying to, they have populations that they have to take care of. They're all, it's all about trade. It's all about what they can get, how much more. And I think this is, they can no longer control what they've been able to control all these years.
Well, part of the reason for that is the internet. There's programs like this on, there's programs like this on the internet that are available to people. Internet, shortwave, whatever, radio stations, we can get on, we can communicate this idea. Information that was not available to the people generally is seeping in.
It's not the people though. It's government. It's China, you know? It's China is coming into their own. You have all these other countries that they don't want to use the petrodollar anymore. They're looking for alternatives. Mm-hmm. They don't believe one country should have the reserve currency. So this is why I believe we're seeing these changes, and that's why it's another reason why it can't continue and it won't continue. So, you know, at one point in time, before we became so globalized, at one point in time, yeah, they could keep the sheep here in this country pretty quiet at the domestic level, but that's changing. So there's a multitude of reasons why this isn't going to continue into the very near future.
And it's just a question of time before something triggers it, and there's no telling what it might be.
You could sit here and name 100
things. It could be financial, it could be political, it could be racial, it could be a bunch of things. It could be the weather. We could have 3 more hurricanes come through. All right? It's hard to say, but we are vulnerable a bunch of different ways, and sooner or later, one of those ways is going to manifest and trigger a lot of trouble. And in our opinion, you're going to do well. You're going to do best if you have your wealth stored in something tangible like
pension.
Gold, silver.
Yeah, forget the pension funds. You look at the bonds in Venezuela. You have debt falling apart in various other parts. You know, Puerto Rico, Venezuela. That's just a name, too, off the top. But we're at the end.
There's some music. We're at the end of the hour. Yes, we are. We'll be back tomorrow. Hope you'll tune in then. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.